I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun. Because you deserve the truth.
Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, I'll be talking with Sarah Burris. She's a reporter at Raw Story, Alternet, and Salon. We, as usual, have a lot to cover, so before we get into it. The Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Sarah Burris. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is the first time we've ever met, as far as, not in person, but, you know, the virtual meetings.
The interwebs.
Yes, the interwebs. And I think, you know, we've been very aware of each other for quite a while. So I don't know if you know this, but I'm the social media manager for MSW Media. So I'm always like, you know, you're on the Rick Smith show all the time. And I'm creating those graphics for it and posting everywhere. So I'm Which very so, familiar with you.
I was super excited to hear that because then it's like, oh, wow, this is the person that I should totally be loving on for being so badass.
Oh, thank you. You know, like I said, I've been very aware of you. I've read your articles. I've shared your articles. So I'm excited to have
you.
I'm excited
oh my
to
gosh.
Have you.
That is such an awesome compliment. Like, I'm always surprised when somebody's like, oh, I read your stuff. I'm like, seriously? That's like the greatest thing in the world. Somebody's mom told me that. I was like, oh my God, I'm like fanning myself.
That is so cool. Yeah, I remember when I first got involved in like activism and somebody told me, at the time I was living in California and someone had said, yeah, somebody in DC knew who you were. And I was like, really? You know, it's like, but
nice.
It's the internet. Everything is so much smaller
yeah.
now. You know, we all, and plus we've kind of got this established group of people who, you know, when it comes to politics, there's just this big, I mean, it's a big one. It's a big group of people, but we've been doing it for so long now. We all kind of know each other or are aware of each other. So like I said, I'm really glad that I have the opportunity to talk to you. And the first thing that I want to talk about, well, I just also want to say, actually, before we get into the topics, is you're a reporter. So because you're a reporter, obviously you have opinions, but you are looking at everything through a reporter's lens. So that's kind of what I want to focus on. I mean, I'm very interested in whatever personal opinions you may have, but you know, you're going to be coming at this from a different point of view maybe than me because I'm not a reporter. So anyway, now that that's out of the way, the first question I have for you is what are the things that you've been covering on Raw Story and Salon?
So a couple of things. Today, obviously, I've been watching the Supreme Court ruling with South Carolina and Planned Parenthood. I've been following the budget negotiations for the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. And generally, I spend a lot of time every day watching Donald Trump, watching his mannerisms, and hearing anything, any changes in him and anything that just sort of stands out to me, because it's, I mean, it's kind of every day is sort of listening to him. It's like Charlie Brown, right? With the want, want, want kind of thing. And after a while, it just really sort of all sounds the same. And so trying to find something that stands out is always my goal every day whenever I'm listening to stuff.
Wow, that's interesting. So let's just dive into the South Carolina ruling. I mean, basically, it's allowing states to cut off Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood. So where do you see this going in the bigger picture?
I obviously I think, this is a huge stupid mistake because there now is all of these right-wing people who claim that they want to stop abortion. Planned Parenthood provides things like birth control and pregnancy tests and STD screenings and things like that. In a state where you've already banned abortion, like they're not providing it. So why would you then want to defund it? And so it like stuff like that doesn't make sense to me. And so a lot of the states, like my home state of Oklahoma, states like Alabama, Texas, defunding Planned Parenthood just doesn't make any sense if you legitimately want to reduce the number of abortions in the country. And so it's frustrating sort of to watch these it's so political, and it's they have spent so many decades pretending to be on this moral high ground when it comes to reproductive freedom, and now we're really starting to see, no, it really wasn't about reducing the number of abortions. It's really just about controlling people.
Yeah, and I think that if they're cutting, I mean, if it's the red states that aren't even, it's not even legal to perform an abortion, then that money is being used for, breast cancer scans and mammograms and, and just overall health for women. So, I mean, they may not be getting an abortion, but they're getting a pap smear, they're getting a mammogram, they're getting care, and that's basically going to be defunded.
So, like a lot of stuff, I kind of go back to, I remember some of the stuff that Mike Pence did when he was a governor in Indiana, and a lot of it was cutting STI testing screenings, cutting needle exchange programs, and it ended up being this massive outbreak of HIV cases in a specific county, and so like a lot of these unintended consequences, I think we're going to sit back and watch happen to South Carolina. I do think that when it comes to the other states, it'll take a little bit longer for folks to fight it out in court, because I think, with a lot of state constitutions, there are some weird little laws that are shoved in there that I think people could fight the state funding cuts for Planned Parenthood on based on some of those little laws. I think too, like it's from a legal perspective, I look at how can you single out Planned Parenthood if they are not providing an abortion, and distinguish it from, say, a crisis pregnancy center. And so for blue states, it makes me wonder, is that then opening the door for a blue state to then come in and say, yeah, okay, we're definitely going to be able to defund a lot of these different random places because you've done it already with South Carolina.
Well, and for those who don't know, crisis pregnancy centers usually are run like with a religious leaning, and they try, or at the very least conservative, and they try to talk women out of abortions. So, and they usually use misinformation to sway women, guilt, misinformation, all of that stuff. So yeah, wow, that's just insane. And I mean, this Supreme Court is just, God, I mean, we could do a whole show on it, and I don't want to because I want to keep my sanity.
Right.
But I'm sorry, please refresh my memory. What were the other things that you were covering outside of this particular ruling?
So the budget stuff,
right,
and
the budget.
And then Donald Trump. Every day is a Donald Trump day.
Let's talk about him, because he's clearly in decline. And, you know, I've joked around, whether it's I'm on the Bob Seska after party, I've talked about this, and I've said this on my show. Now, I want to be very, 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 very clear here that I like to watch these videos, and I'm going to talk about them in a second, but I don't necessarily buy into them. But there are all these YouTube tarot card readers and astrologers. Specifically, there's one that it's called Trump Health Watch, but it's really like Trump Death Watch. So when I listen, this woman who does the show, she's, you know, she's a liberal and she understands what's going on. And then she lays out the cards and she tries to determine what's wrong with him, or, you know, whatever is going on with his body. And does she get that death card and all of that? So when I listen to it, like I said, I want to be clear, I don't necessarily buy into the tarot reading. What I like doing is immersing myself in the idea that he is so unhealthy and he's not going to make it. Because so many of us just, you know, we wake up every day and we're like, oh, more, you know, we just don't want this anymore. So
yeah.
Anyway, you know, as a reporter and as someone who is watching him every single day, and I'm sorry, I'm very sorry that you have to watch him every single day. You know, what's your take on him? I mean, let's even go back to like 2016 to now.
So, yeah, there are a couple of things. We just celebrated, what was it, like the 10-year anniversary of him coming down the escalator.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing some of the videos of the speech that he made that day. And it really struck me just how different he has changed in those last 10 years. How much he's slowed down, how much how incoherent he has become.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, it's hard to say it that way, but it's just
true.
The way that he speaks, the way that he was in 15, in that speech in particular, he seemed, much more confident.
Mm-hmm.
And much more, I mean, even though he was saying, you know, crazy things, he was still articulating them in a way that I think felt more normal, like a normal politician saying stuff. And mm-hmm. now it sort of seems like he's rambling all over the place and all of these strange tangents, and he forgets what he's saying in the middle of a sentence and then pivots to some other issue. I mean, it's just different from what we have seen, I think, in the first Trump iteration.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been strange to watch. One of the things that, you know, you talked about in the beginning is that, you know, the internet obviously has brought us all together mm-hmm. In such a unique way, but it's really kind of opened up this ability for us to have access to experts when it comes to mental health and physical health. And so one of the things that I do, but some as a reporter, but some just out of my own curiosity, is watching some of those accounts that are monitoring, you know, this is not normal. This is not normal, because I'm not, obviously not an expert when it comes to, you know, dementia issues or whatever. So it's nice to hear experts be able to come online and be like, all right, this is normal. Don't think that he's, you know, his brain has fallen out of his ear or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously as he continues to decline physically and I think mentally,
mm-hmm.
It's nice to sort of see that validation from experts who know far better.
Yeah, I think even beyond the experts, I mean, I look at it this way. If I loved him and he were my father or family member, I would be very concerned.
Right.
So that's kind of how I take it. And, you know, I was having this conversation with someone who does not like him. And she said something like, you know, but he could go on for years and years and years. And I said, well, obviously. I mean, obviously he could live until his 90s, his father did. So, I mean, his father living to his 90s doesn't mean Donald Trump will. We don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, it's just evident. It is so evident. And then there was some speculation from Midas Touch that he's wearing a catheter. There was this picture. I don't know if you saw it, but it was, I think he was on the White House lawn, and it was from behind, and around his calves were two different, I don't know, things you could see through his pants. Like, I mean, it was, you know, maybe they were leg braces. So people are wondering, are those leg braces? Are they two different catheters? The thing about this is, I mean, I know that on one hand, it kind of looks petty, but he is the president, whether we like it or not. And Jake Tapper wrote a book all about the decline of Joe Biden after the fact. And it's like, it seems the mainstream media just doesn't want to cover his obvious mental decline and physical decline. I mean, before the election, I keep saying this, before the election, he basically performed fellatio in a microphone and went on and on about Arnold Palmer's gigantic penis. And okay, it's like, oh, ha 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 ha, funny penis, but it's not funny because he's supposed to be the president of the United States. And of course, at the time he was campaigning, but nobody gave a shit. You know, it was just like another day. We just expect the, you know, I want to ask you this as a reporter. I mean, this whole thing that Donald Trump gets a pass on everything from the mainstream media, from the corporate media, not from reporters like you, but somebody, you know, the Jake Tappers of the world. It's like he just gets to act like this insane, incoherent freak. And oh, it's just what we expect from him. I mean, how does that, how do you as a reporter even deal with that? Because I don't know that I could.
That is a big frustration because I think for folks who have watched this for such a long time and see the difference, it's frustrating to see the comparison between the way that they treated Joe Biden versus the way that they treat Trump. I remember when Biden was on his bike doing a thing, and the reporters were like right in front of him, and so he had to stop, and he was wearing those bike clips, those shoes that clip into the pedals, and he didn't pop his clip the right way on his shoe, and so it, you know, having to abruptly stop in because people were right there, and not pop his foot out the right way meant that he like stumbled and fell over. And everybody was just like, oh my God, this is the end times. He's on his deathbed. If you remember, George W. Bush had like a black eye for a while because he choked on a pretzel and fell over and hit like the coffee table. And so there are obviously times where we have presidents who are complete klutzes. And I don't understand why Trump is getting a pass for something that is not just an innocent, like, oh, he tripped over something. And you're right. Like the Tapper stuff is really frustrating. And, you know, I've kind of stayed quiet because I'm friends with Tapper. And so it's hard for me to like, I'm just being like, good on you for saying your whatever, you know, saying your piece. But clearly, you know, I don't agree with it because it's not the same accounting that I was hearing from people in Washington. So I think what is the frustrating thing in terms of the way it's being covered is I think he gets away with inoculating himself by constantly acting insane. And I think that's sort of also the idea of the way that they want, they as the White House want to deal with coverage of different things. Like there's always a distraction. There's always something to pull you in some different direction. Steve Bannon used to, was the one who really started the fire hose aspect of news where it's like, if something terrible happens and you screw up something, then we just fire hose it with 11 billion things. And so to some extent, I think a lot of the things that Trump does are intentionally insane, intentionally erratic, intentionally stupid to draw people away from what is really going on. You know, I think a lot of that became a topic of conversation when he bombed Iran, Because everybody was like, is he doing this because he can't fix the economy because he's tanked the economy over mistakes with tariffs. What is he trying to distract us from domestically? So I think for some extent, it's frustrating because watching the news, I think it's different with Raw Story because we are nonstop pushing out content constantly from several different people, whereas mainstream media is deciding what is going to be the focus that night. And shows will do, four blocks in their hour where they decide what the topic and what the conversation is going to be. And we are not hamstrung by that same, requirement where we can just kind of follow the fire hose. We can get every bit of the water, but folks who are on TV, can't necessarily do that. And not every, New York Times story is going to be go into the weeds with, some mental health expert about, has he lost his mind? So it's frustrating. It's easy for us to get it, and I think that helps us stay in business, essentially. But we're not obviously the mainstream media. We're not the ones that are getting all of the readership and attention. We're basically preaching to the choir.
Do you see any difference in viewership basically since the election? Because I have not watched MSNBC, which was my go-to, and I haven't watched it since the election. I will say that it was on briefly in our house on Saturday because of the bombing, but and it wasn't my choice. It was my boyfriend. I don't know if you know I'm with my boyfriend is Bob Seska, but he wanted to watch it, so I didn't argue. But I have a problem. I mean, I love Lawrence O'Donnell, and I love Rachel Maddow, and I love a number of people on that network. It's the problem that I have is that the CEOs are kind of like leaning into fascism, and in Black History Month they got rid of all their people of color, and it just really pisses me off. And I understand the importance of having some kind of I don't know, national news, but this isn't really like the national news. It's a cable situation. So there is no longer this just kind of one news source that we can all look at and agree upon, and that's awful. And I know, like, I feel slightly guilty because I won't give attention to MSNBC anymore. But I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, as a reporter and going out there and doing what you're doing, do you see a difference in the viewership since the election? Like, for me, I can say for my podcast, I lost some followers because they were afraid. They were afraid of the economy. They didn't want to spend the money. I think a lot of people who left, and it wasn't a huge portion of listeners, but it was a good enough portion. And it was pretty much right after the election. And they said in their exit surveys that they just couldn't bear to listen anymore. So, I mean, I don't know. What are you seeing over on the sites that you're working on?
So, I mean, just anecdotally from an engagement perspective, I think people ahead of an election, people are always going to pay more attention. And after an election, people are
Yeah, they
always
drop
going to be
off.
like, I'm over it. And that sort of happened both in terms of the engagement that I usually get just on social media and with people that I interact with, in a normal day for political stuff. And it really hasn't been that different for me from, I think previous years.
Well, that's good, yeah.
It's been, I think Trump sort of changed the game for a lot of people because there's always drop off. There was always drop off. There was after his first term or after his first election, after Biden's election. But usually when the new year comes around, it kind of steps back up again, and people start dipping their toes in. I think in what, just from my perspective, it seems like folks are just really tired. And it is part of that fire hose aspect. There's not, you don't get to have a normal day of politics where it's like, you're talking about really boring things like infrastructure. And you know, obviously that became a running joke in the first Trump campaign, because every time, or in the first Trump administration, because every time, you know, they wanted to distract something, they'd be like, "Hey, it's infrastructure week again, but we're not going to do anything." But now it really is. I mean, we're 5.5 months in, and we already bombed somebody. And so that piece of it, where it's like, where I don't know how I'm going to do this for 5 months, because the first Trump administration was really hard. Like that took me down. I was burned out and exhausted. And then COVID hit, and it's just like, oh geez. So, but this time around, I feel like in the last 5 months, I've aged like 30 years.
Yeah, I know.
I'm
I know.
exhausted.
Yeah,
So
it's been hard.
I wonder if everybody is feeling that same kind of thing, where it's like, I really just want, people just want to win. You know, they want something that makes, you know, like I watched my basketball team back home, Oklahoma City Thunder, won the championship. And so everybody back home was just going completely insane. And so I think people are just desperate for, like, we want something that's good that happens.
Just
And
bring normal, something that feels normal and not so traumatizing. It's like every day the news is traumatizing. And then
And
on
I
top
think,
of it, I mean, I just want to quickly say, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more next week with my guest, but I don't know if you're familiar, but there's this woman, her name is Michaela Rains. She ran the Save a Fox Sanctuary. And
yes,
yes,
I
and un
saw that.
unfortunately, I was a huge fan. I mean, I've donated, my family has gotten me gifts from that sanctuary. I have depended on her YouTube and Instagram channels many times, you know, for when I'm down, I go over and her relationships with those animals, it was so beautiful. And unfortunately, she committed suicide. And it's a long story. Like I said, I'm gonna talk about it on my show next week, but it's, you know, she suffered from autism as well as not bipolar. I'll think of it in a second. BPD. I think that's what it's called. BDP. Borderline personality disorder. So anyway, that's really gotten me down. And that's why I'm bringing this up, because on top of the fact that, you know, we've been stressed out and traumatized by what's been happening in the political sphere, which affects all of our lives very, you know, so much. We're seeing people disappeared, all of that stuff. Now I mean, this has rocked the world as far as any rescue situation. The whole rescue world is, you know, just blown away by this. And I can say that, I mean, it has affected me so deeply. I wake up every morning and it's the first thing on my mind now. I wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. It's the first thing on my mind. I scroll down Facebook and every fourth or fifth post is about her. And so the whole thing that I'm trying to bring up is like, you're talking about being exhausted and it's only been 5.5 months. I mean, we need something good. We need something positive. And I know that, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the midterms, but we've got a long way to go. You know, we've got to be kind to ourselves or something, because we're not going to get through this if we just stay
Drink
so
whiskey.
focused. Whatever it is you need to do.
I remember during COVID, that was one of the main things that it seemed like folks were doing in lockdown. If you remember, like, Kristen Bell and her husband were doing like a good news podcast, and then everybody was posting. I mean, my weakness is cute furry animal videos, so my Instagram is very carefully curated to, you know, like, choirs that sing beautiful music and cute furry animal mu videos. So, I think, you know, that's how I sort of do my own self-care. But I think the thing that I loved about COVID is that there was so much of that, where we were celebrating people doing amazing things. We were, you know, every day at the same time, people in New York City were cheering out their windows for first responders and for nurses and doctors and stuff. And so, you know, things like that, where I wish we could bring that back, because even though we're not all terrified that we're going to die because of a pandemic, I think emotionally, as a society, we need that kind of happiness, where we can at least rally around something together.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, look, I'm just going to pivot over to the fact that, I mean, we've been seeing all these protests, and obviously his military parade was a big bomb. And it was so poorly attended that you could hear the tanks squeaking. And it appeared as if the Marines, I guess, I don't know, whoever was marching appeared to be out of step. And everybody who's in the military was like, that's intentional. They did that intentionally. There's no way. Because that's like the first thing you learn. So as a reporter, from your reporter lens, what do you make of what you're seeing from the people as far as the resistance? We've seen, you know, Tesla go down. It keeps losing. We've seen definitely with like Target, they're losing money because of their DEI enforcing, or getting rid of DEI, I should say. Obviously, Rachel Maddow had mentioned like every single day there's a protest. This was a little while ago, so I'm not sure that there's been protests every single day since she mentioned it. But I think, you know, there we are seeing. And then, of course, we did see, I think it was the No Kings that was like, I don't know. I've heard 5 million and 12 million. Do you know the actual number?
I've heard most of the ones that I was hearing were over 10 million.
Okay.
That I felt like were credible.
Okay, well, that would be, if it was over 10 million, I think, I don't know what the actual number is that we have to hit to get to the percentage of people that basically takes this in a trajectory where it's not going to stop. But I think we're there because, you know, we keep seeing, you know, one other thing I'm just going to throw in is supposedly, and I think there was even an elected official, so please forgive me for not remembering who she was, but an elected official who called out to the Cholos, which is a gang in Los Angeles, to, you know, put aside their differences with other gangs and to escort anybody who is, you know, picked up by ICE or whatever, you know, basically fight back against ICE. And, you know, I used to live in Los Angeles. I'm very well aware of all these gangs. And I think this woman got in trouble for saying that. But I, you know, I'm all for it, you know, because we're in times that are not normal. And, it, you know, I don't like that there are gang members, but if they're going to exist, I'd like to see them fighting back against ICE. So what is your take on everything that you're seeing from like I said, that reporter lens?
That is such a huge question.
I know it is.
What I've noticed is that to some extent, I see local reporter or local elected officials really stepping up in ways that I am not used to. So, I mean, obviously my lens is always looking back at home because it's a red state and it's really conservative. And so I'm always kind of looking at, you know, is this message from Democrats sinking in to that world? And if it is, then that means, holy crap, it's huge. It's a big deal if it does. And so if I'm starting to hear people who are actually repeating the idea of the Republicans are cutting your Medicaid to fund tax cuts to billionaires. That message is definitely sinking in.
Good.
The other thing is a good friend of mine just won a special election in a House seat in Tulsa. And she's like my age. And so I'm always excited to see that a young person, regardless of party, is running for office. But what I'm starting to see beyond just like my circle of friends from home, is that a ton of young people are now stepping up to run for office because people are angry and they want something proactive to do with it. Taking to the streets is great. Like, it makes for a good kind of camaraderie, and I absolutely love taking pictures of it. It is so much fun. I love protest signs. I think they are so funny and so, like, anybody who can do, especially if there's a pun in it, that just makes my day. I love punny protest signs. So if I could have my druthers, I would just sit on a photography platform and just take pictures of protest signs. So it's great to rally folks around that, but I think once you do beyond what you do beyond that, and the boycott thing is is happening, but it is having an effect. I saw the head of the NAACP talk about the DEI protest for Target, and already people, the LGBTQ community broke up with Target over the fight over Pride stuff. Was that last year or the year before? So already, Target took a little bit of a hit. Now it's expanding who it's alienating, and it with the DEI thing. And so now it's really having an impact. And I want to say it was like the CEO had to like slash their own salary, which, I mean, obviously, if you're getting several millions of dollars a year as a CEO, but your shareholders are just being crushed, it's not a good look, right? So there is an impact beyond just taking to the streets, and that is what I'm sort of watching in terms of, it is what, we're more than a year out, we're a year and a half out from the midterm election, and people are already signing up to run for office. And that blows my mind. Like that has never happened like that before.
That's great to hear. That is great to hear. All right. So what I'm going to do is kind of use that to spring off of the whole Cuomo situation in New York. So, we know Bill Clinton supported Cuomo, came out and endorsed him. Evidently, Bill Clinton's endorsement doesn't hold as much as it used to. But I know there was a lot of money put behind Cuomo, and the Democratic Party was supporting him. Yet, the Democratic Socialist one, his name is Zohran Mamdani. And now I'm going to throw out my opinion here just because I want to. But then, I'm going to go back to your take on this and how you look at this, whether it's personally or through the reporter lens. But number one, I think that, the Democratic Party, I'm not a reporter. I'm just a big mouth with a podcast. So what I see, and I am
And bless
pro-Democrat.
you for it.
I am pro-Democrat. So my goal here is not to bash Democrats. My goal is to criticize them so that the rest of us who are just average, voters put the pressure on them because 128 of them voted with the GOP against impeachment. And, we've seen Democrats voting for these fascist nominees in the confirmation process. I don't, there are a number of very vocal Democrats who are out there fighting fascism, and then there's just a bunch of the party, and it doesn't matter. I'm talking all the way. I'm not just talking about the Senate and the House. I'm talking everybody in the party, whether you're a comptroller, whether you're at a school, wherever you are. I think what I would like to see is total unity and obstruction, because that's all the GOP ever did when Democrats were in office. They found ways to obstruct and delay and basically get in the way of the Democratic agenda. So I don't see the Democrats doing that with the Republicans. What I'm seeing is this kind of, everything's normal and we're just doing what we normally do. And I've heard people argue with me online, or I've seen them argue with me online, that this whole vote for impeachment wasn't going to go through anyway. That's not the point. The point is the Democratic Party needs to show its voters that it's unified against fascism. This is not just your grand old party that everybody was used to 15 years ago. Everything is different now. And so in this election, it was a big deal. It was a big, big fucking deal. And now Cuomo is teasing that he might be running as an independent. And there's kind of two lines of thinking on this, because if he does, and the election is in November, if he runs as an independent, he could split the Democratic ticket, giving the Republicans the win. Although the other line on this, and this is my mother, I talked to her today, she's a political junkie and she's pretty good at this stuff. I think her hopeful take on this was that because it was New York and because of what we're seeing happening in Los Angeles with ICE, and New York absolutely knows it's one of those cities that is, it's, I don't know if it's going to happen in New York, what's been happening in Los Angeles before this election. Either way, New Yorkers can see that it's happening. So we really don't know what he's going to decide and how this is going to play out. I pretty much trust that New Yorkers would vote for the Democrat. But I just, on your opinion on this, I don't know where you stand on talking about your feelings on the Democratic Party, but at the very least, just from that perspective of what you're witnessing, how do you see this between the two parties? What is your take on these two parties?
So I definitely agree with your mother. I think the reason that you haven't seen what's happening in LA happen in New York City is because Eric Adams has a deal with the White House. And I think it will depend on who takes over that office, how Donald Trump responds. And so I think if
Interesting.
so I think if it's I don't I think folks in New York are probably looking for a fighter. It seems like the focus groups and the polls that I've heard about indicate that that's what voters really want, is somebody who will fight back against Donald Trump, even though this is a local election. And like my number one issue is potholes and stuff like that. So it's obviously different from this year rather than other years. And so I think folks are looking at the ICE thing and realizing this is going to come to a town near us soon, and they're going to want somebody who's brave enough to fight back. And I don't think people necessarily trust that Cuomo is that guy.
No. No.
He kind of was a little bit during COVID, but I feel like since then he really has just disappeared. And so it just kind of became an opportunity for him to try and reignite his own political career. And I think voters are just like, bro, like, we're not here for you. We need somebody to actually, fight for our city. In terms of what I see in Congress, that is the most frustrating thing in the world, is just how boring Democrats are. And it's the Senate mostly, just because that's on my mind because of the Bovee hearing yesterday that I watched from the Judiciary Committee. And you have these folks like, Sheldon Whitehouse and Blumenthal, who are some of the smartest people that they have in office. And they were a little bit more animated. Adam Schiff's more animated, but I'm looking at Dick Durbin being like the most boring person. I'm like, this is interesting stuff that you could be talking about. I mean, this guy has had all kinds of crazy allegations against him. And he was talking, like he was evading all of their questions. And Durbin was just so chill and calm about it. And it took White House and Blumenthal to step up and be like, you're giving conflicting statements. Like they didn't call him an outright liar, which was sad because that would have made a great headline. But things like that, where we see who just became the chair of the Oversight Committee after Representative Connolly passed, and it's like another boring Democrat. And it's like, man, if you're talking about oversight, you want somebody like Jasmine Crockett. You want somebody like AOC. Not necessarily because they are smarter or better, but because they will draw attention to it and make the headlines. And that is the one failure that Democrats tend to do, is they still think in this mindset of there is campaign season and there's legislating season, and neither the two shall meet. And it has been that way for like 30 years. I'm sure longer, but in terms of my career, I've watched this happen for decades, where I'm like, y'all need to have a nonstop campaign season. Like, you're not doing this right. And it just from a marketing perspective, if you have somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene go up against Dick Durbin, it's obviously on an intellectual level, like she's going to get crushed, but a lot of people don't listen to what anybody says. They just look at the picture on TV. They listen to the sound of the yelling, right? And that just kind of is going to kill somebody like, Durbin or some of the more dull members. And I think that's true for Jeffries too. Like, Hakeem Jeffries is smart. He's good at raising a lot of money. But every press conference I've ever seen, I'm falling asleep. It's like, bro, come on, like you're killing
Yeah.
us.
100%. Yeah, it's very frustrating. And I mean, the thing that is the most frustrating to me is that they're treating this fascist regime as just, the Republican Party of yesteryear. And that's not who we're dealing with. And it makes voters scared. It makes voters, I mean, I'm a voter and I'm like, we're still in the, I, here's what I think. I think that because of what Donald Trump and Stephen Miller and all these people are doing, I think voters will be motivated and they won't need that push. But is the Democratic Party going to learn a lesson from this in the following elections? And that's what scares me because, the boring times, and this is, I put this on the voters, boring times, people don't pay attention and they don't vote. People think, oh, I just, they're so proud of themselves for voting, every 2 years. And it's like, well, there's elections every year. And the most, well, some of the most important elections are those local elections because they're absolutely affecting your rights and what you can and can't do. And people just don't pay attention. So I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how, because of this Democratic Socialist winning, and it's like all they can say all over Fox News is Democratic Socialist. And then they just put a list of everything that he wants to do. And it's just like, let's help people. Let's just do the right thing. So, I don't know if this Democratic Socialist moniker is going to be as scary as they want it to be, but we did see New Yorkers tell Cuomo to leave, so that's good, or go away, we don't like you. He got some votes, but he did have
But
to
it was kind of
concede.
embarrassing.
It was kind of embarrassing, especially after they had raised all that money and Bill Clinton came out for him. So yeah, that was a sign that there things could be changing, and I hope that this is a message to the Democratic Party, and I know they're not going to take it today.
No.
Because I know that Chuck Schumer is just going to have that sternly worded letter and his stupid speech. But I don't know. We've got some time, and that's what I'm hoping for because everything isn't, we don't have elections yet. In the interim, we're just going to have to watch Donald Trump trash the country as much as he possibly can. So it's all very upsetting. And again, I'm very sorry that you have to watch him every day. I know that's very difficult. But it was really fascinating talking to you. And I do hope that you'll come back for another chat down
Absolutely. I would
the
love to.
line. Cool. Yes. Like I said, I always see you on Rick Smith's show. And I'm like, I got to get her on. So, all right. As I ask all of my guests to, as they part, please tell everybody where to find you.
You can find me on all of the social media. I'm almost always Sarah Burris, just my name.
Okay.
On Facebook, I have a page that's Sarah K. Burris
Oh
because,
no.
yeah, I know. It just totally jacks my branding up. But I'm funny. I try to be funny because you should laugh instead of cry.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because I hope that I can make people a little bit more entertained throughout their day because we need it.
Yes, we absolutely do. Well, thank you so much for what you do, and thank you for being a guest on the show.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Thank you. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll be in touch, so you take care.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta have it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter.
And grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange? President. And has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun. I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool and let's kick it.